There was one day when I was seriously concerned for her safety, just because she was an Austrian. The night before, the Austrian press attaché had been dragged from his bed, arrested, and expelled. We were angry with Austria because it had refused to unite with us. Dollfuss, in Vienna, reacted by expelling one or maybe more Nazis. I do not remember exactly, but I do remember how the press bayed with one voice at the enormity of this provocation by the Austrian regime. Engelbert Dollfuss was the right-wing chancellor of Austria who suppressed the Austrian Nazis in June 1933 and was assassinated in a botched Nazi coup attempt on July 25, 1934. "This will not go unanswered," they wrote. Given the style of our government, what could a response consist of but the expulsion of all Austrians? But fate was kind to us. Hitler found a problem with the idea, or put it aside for something else. This time it did go unanswered, and Teddy was allowed to stay. "This really is my last visit," said Teddy. I told her that I intended to come to Paris soon, and we immediately began to make plans. A little international theatre appeared, like a castle in Spain, run perhaps by students or emigrant actors. "How are the German emigrants doing?" I asked hopefully. But Teddy only answered evasively, "Those poor people are not on their best form. It's only to be expected," she said mildly. A few days passed in this way. Then there was a thunderbolt. Teddy told me, or rather she let me surmise and deduce, that she was about to be married, very soon after her return. "Mr. Andrews?" I asked, with sudden inspiration. He had not played a major part in her reports. She nodded. "Very good," I said. We were sitting on the terrace of the Romanische Café, opposite the Gedächtniskirche, at the end of the Kurfürstendamm. Once it had been the meeting place of literary Berlin, now it was deserted. The squat stone towers of the church seemed to close in on me like dungeon walls. "Mon pauvre vieux," said Teddy, "is it very bad?" I shook my head. Then she said something that sent a sweet wave of pain through my head. There had never been a question of anything like marriage between us, and our love affair had always been interrupted just at the crucial moment. I had never been very certain that I was not just a friend among others for her, and I had never told her what she meant to me. It would have been difficult to express. It would have sounded too grandiloquent and sentimental. Even our most intimate moments had had a light, playful tone. "We would not have been able to marry now, anyway," she said. "How would you have managed here with me?"
"You thought about it?" I said mawkishly.
"Of course," she laughed. Then with a gesture of infinite warmth, "and for now I'm still here." Parting. Another parting, but such a resounding, moving parting like none of the others. Everything seemed to be all right again, as though it had all just been a preparation for these 3 weeks that remained to us. Everything had moved aside and made room for me. There were no other friends and no duties to prevent me from being with Teddy from early till late and to be there for her entirely. She also seemed to have come just to see me, even if it was only to say goodbye. At this moment the world seemed to withdraw, as if by agreement, to free these 3 weeks. The German Reich generously took its time before it finally laid its hand, already hovering on my shoulder. There was no official letter to call me away. My parents went on vacation. Poor Charlie became ill and had to go to the hospital. She seemed to be doing me a terrible favour that I could hardly accept. I know I should not have felt that way. The 3 weeks passed like a single day, yet they were no idyll. We hardly ever had time to act like a pair of lovers, or to talk about our feelings. Teddy had to arrange her mother's emigration. She was a little old lady, sitting quietly and hopelessly among her pieces of furniture, no longer able to understand the world. So we passed our time at consulates, government offices, and moving companies, and spent hours in the waiting room of the government currency exchange office. Every day we had to make plans and organize things. Then we had to oversee the packers and the moving men. Departure and leave-taking. It was a familiar scenario. But these 3 weeks of departure and leave-taking were all the time we had left in the whole of eternity to express all the long-held feelings of our bashful, tender love. We were as inseparable as if we were newly betrothed, and as familiar and easy as an old married couple. There were no wasted moments. Even sitting in the waiting room of the currency office, discussing what we would tell the officials, was full of sweetness. That office's final verdict was that a certain proportion of the family money would not be permitted to leave the country. "There's nothing to be done," said Teddy. "I'll have to smuggle it. I'm not going to let them steal it from us."
"But if you get caught..."
"I won't get caught," she said, beaming with confidence. "By the way, I know how to bind books." So for a few days we sat in Teddy's long-unused bedroom and fabricated bookbindings, using a lot of cardboard, art paper, and glue. Inside, they were made of 100-mark notes. Looking up from our work, we suddenly saw our faces in the mirror. "Old jailbirds," said Teddy, and work stopped for a couple of minutes. One day our work was interrupted by the doorbell. There were two SA men at the door. This time they only rattled collection boxes menacingly. I said, "Sorry," rudely, and shut the door in their faces. With Teddy behind me, I felt an indescribable gay confidence. But sometimes I would wake up at night and the world would seem grey as a gallows yard. In those hours, but only then, I knew that it was all over. Mr. Andrews was waiting for Teddy in Paris. When I arrived there, she would be Mrs. Andrews, and I liked Andrews far too much to cheat him. Perhaps they would have children. This thought made me feel sick to death. I saw Andrews before me as I had sometimes seen him 2 years before. It had been a peculiar time. Teddy had remained in Paris against her family's wishes, a prodigal daughter with no money but lots of friends, who all wanted to tear off as large a piece of her for themselves as they could get, and who were all incapable of really helping her. I was not much better than any of the others. At that time the quiet Mr. Andrews had occasionally come to Teddy's tiny, untidy hotel room, put his feet up on the chimney-piece, and had an unnecessary and ineffective language lesson. Then he would unexpectedly say something really clever and helpful, smiling slightly before he left again, quietly and unobtrusively. A patient man. Now he was going to marry Teddy. An Englishman. The English always seemed to have all the luck. They got everything worth having in the world. India and Egypt and Gibraltar and Cyprus and Australia and South Africa, the gold countries, Canada, and now also Teddy. A poor German like me had the Nazis instead. Those were the miserable thoughts I had if, by some misfortune, I awoke during the night. The next day it would all be forgotten, and I was happy. It was autumn, an early golden autumn. The sun shone every day. There was still no official letter. Today we had to go to the finance ministry, then to the police and the consulate. If we were lucky, there might be an hour free in the afternoon for a walk in the Tiergarten. We might hire a rowing boat, and Teddy all day. Let us not look forward, nor back, be cradled as in a swaying boat on the sea. Friedrich Hölderlin. Mnemosyne.